when the guys asked me what my perfect night would be, I told them the truth. Beer and board games. They thought I was kidding. I was not kidding.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know what time it is. You know what that song means. I vaguely know what it means. It's time for another hour or so of the Personal Arrogance Podcast, brought to you this week by myself, Aaron Hubbard, and my guest host,
Jim Jones. It is absolutely brought to you by Bald Move this week.
Yes, that's right. Signed, sealed, delivered. The boys, I don't know. It's, Jesse got married. I guess that's okay. Eric was pleading fourth fatigue. So we stepped up, and hopefully we'll carry you through this week of personal arrogance.
So what they've been talking about, this battle between our podcasts for a long time. Yeah, I think it's funny that on Independence Day, the day that they should be podcasting about how, fuck you guys, we're going to start our own network, we're forging out on our own, we're actually conducting their podcast. I think that's awesome.
It would be basically like if we had some giant national 4th of July party, and it was like DJ'd by the Queen of England, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, they can talk all they want about how they won the war and subsumed the empire or whatever, but 4th of July, we're hosting your podcast, boys.
Yeah, Bill Pullman would be ashamed.
Oh, God, that's nice joke, Jim. Very thanks. Rarely do you catch me off guard like that. But how was your week, man?
Oh, my week is always busy with work. We finished up our Mad Men podcast and still doing the Falling Skies thing, so it's been busy with work and podcasting.
I gotta say, I'm feeling really good because I got done with the silly season of two podcasts a week, largely unscathed, and we're heading into like a 4 or 5 week hiatus, which is going to be not really a hiatus because we're going to be doing a lot of fulfilling Kickstarter rewards and planning on our bigger and badder Breaking Good season. I'm gonna be marathoning some Breaking Bad to get prepped for that, but I'm feeling pretty relaxed, feeling pretty good.
Good.
It's weird talking about our personal lives because that's kind of like something we tried not to do on the other cast.
Yeah. It's a different vibe on this cast, which I like.
It is.
But you've got the ultimate question: what are you drinking? Doesn't look like you're drinking anything.
I'm actually drinking Third Shift Lager. It's kind of lame. Okay. But this was kind of short notice, and I didn't have time to go get my craft beer on. What you drinking?
Gotcha. Well, you know I'm not a beer guy.
Right.
Well, with exception of a few beers. Don't have any of those around today. Instead, I'm drinking the good old Mad Men Fallback Canadian Club.
Oh.
Not terrible. I actually have a bottle of Gentleman Jack up on my fridge,
mm-hmm.
but I don't like it as well as the cheaper Canadian Club.
Well, and I think there's a 15 or 18 year Canadian Club that's no slouch, honestly.
Yeah. I don't know how many years this one is, but I don't know. I like it better than Gentleman Jack, that's for sure.
Question: do you have a dedication for this week?
A dedication? Can we dedicate it to ourselves? Because that would be the cherry on top, right?
All right. We're dedicating the episode 152 of the Personal Arrogance Podcast. I think I got the number right. If not,
yep,
who gives a shit, really? We are dedicating it to ourselves. to the classic Blue Yonder crew of Jim and Aaron.
Yep. Awesome.
I love it. We are kind of pressed for time this week, so we're not going to do any listener feedback. Plus, I feel like that would really be treading on some holy ground. So instead, I thought we'd skip right to our little tiny Matt Roloff and get into our topics. I'm using the Dungeons & Dragons official dice roller at wizards.com. So I'm rolling now, and I got a 17.
All right. I'm going to roll one right now. 13. Looks like you're the man.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now I actually have to think of a topic and talk about it. So one thing that I've been thinking about ever since I saw, I think it was a Nova or it was a Discovery Channel, but it was something about humans and faster than light travel and, you know, how they always do like the fantastic, like, well, you could do this or you could do that or this is possible, that's possible. And then every science show, the last 10 minutes, they pour a bucket of cold water, basically saying, yeah, that's probably not going to happen. It's impossible. You can't go faster than light.
Sure.
One of the alternatives that they just kind of dashed off for 30 seconds was the concept of a generational starship. Are you familiar with the concept?
Sure. Yeah, that's where you send out a ship that's designed to travel for multiple generations of human beings.
Yeah, at slower, significantly slower than light speed travel. So like say, you know, it might take 1,000 years to get to a star system 20 light years away, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe longer. So you have to have a starship capable of feeding, clothing, housing, not just one, but multiple generations of people. And I started thinking about...
Let's be honest. Clothing optional, right? I mean, you can't justify the extra weight.
Well, we're going to get to that. We're going to get to the societal implications because, like, the most... leaving aside whether it's possible or not to actually do something like that, it seems to me that the first generation and the last generation are the only people that are actually important in this whole experiment. All the middle generations... You don't remember leaving Earth, and you're not going to have a hope of seeing the destination. So what is the societal implications of being one of those in-between generations that doesn't really matter except to live and die entirely for the furtherance of a future generation?
Okay, so are we talking about logistics here? Like, how would you pull this off? Because if that's the case, then I want to say those middle generations don't understand what's going on. They're like, remember in Star Trek Insurrection where they had the cloaking ship that they put all those people onto and they thought that it was their home planet and they were just going to transport them off?
Right.
You'd have to do something like that to where people didn't realize that they were on a ship or at least didn't know why they were there.
Because
otherwise, why would they contribute to that?
Well, see, I'm trying to think of so you need methods of control. Number one, do you think society could evolve into such a way that's in a completely altruistic sense that they would see a sense of a duty and mission in just caretaking the next generations to arrive at a planet? It seems like that's risking an awful lot.
It is, and I think maybe a moral question that comes up is you'd probably have to do some pruning. Of the people of the generations in the middle, right?
Well, yeah.
Like, plus, there will inevitably be people who say, "No, fuck this! I want to land this thing. I want to get on a planet and just live my life."
Right. So that is one consideration. There's a couple ways you can kind of mediate that. You're one is kind of like a sleight of hand, right? You're going to use holodeck technology or whatnot to fool people into thinking that they're actually either already on the planet or they're arriving on the planet or whatnot. My question is, don't you still need a nucleus of people that are actually running shit? I mean, you need your professional classes, you need your technical classes, you need your engineers that actually kind of know what the hell's going on so they can keep the deluded fools that are just basically, you know, breeding stock, pacified and happy. And how do you keep those people from burning out and being like, you know what, we're just going to steer this into the nearest sun?
Well, that would
be pretty hard in interstellar space. Or I guess the question would be, how would you keep them from just venting the entire craft to space?
Yeah. I don't know. So you're right. You definitely have to have some sort of hierarchy with people who know about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like you said, how do you maintain the ship? I don't know how you convince those people. It would have to be a selection process. Like, the people from the previous generation, before they got too old and started to die or whatever, they would have to hand select the next people in that top level of hierarchy.
To, like, bring them into the fold?
Yeah, yeah. You couldn't just say, okay, these kids born now are going to be part of it.
Even that's risky because it seems like you would have to be deadly sure that the next generation you pick is not going to pull a Neo, right?
Oh, completely.
And choose the right-hand door instead of the left-hand door, you know?
Yeah.
I'm wondering if this wouldn't be a great place to engineer a religion, Scientology style.
Oh, boy.
Because yeah, then the first generation has to be complicit, right?
Uh-huh. Sure.
They all know they're boarding a ship, and they're the non-deluded people, but they're going to intentionally teach their children about this religion where they're on the starship and they've got a priest class that, you know, is the ones that maintain the systems, and you've got worker classes that assist them. And then, it's like you could get this to where, you know, you can't question the law and you can't question the mean and the purpose. And if you do, you're executed.
Man, you're running a tight ship, apparently.
Dude, it has to be. I mean, you're talking about these middle generations are human machinery.
I don't want to live on your generation ship.
I don't want to
be any generation on your generation ship.
I'm saying that it's dark. It's like it's been keeping me up at night thinking about how you could do this non-exploitatively. And I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe another thing is you basically tell them most of the truth. But this gets dark too pretty quick. So maybe what you tell them is that instead of this doing one long 20 light year trip, it's going to make smaller, faster than light hops, even though they don't know this is happening. And like every so many years, like maybe like every 3 years, the ship is going to stop. And people over the age of 50 are going to board the landing craft. And the younger people are going to go on because they've got, you know, they planned this to where everybody's going to reach their destinations at the right age. So
yeah, what's that Ewan McGregor movie, The Island? Is that
yes, The Island. Yeah.
Him and that one girl.
Or you could do, that's another one. You could do just a straight up lottery style, but you're still playing the percentages of the stuff. But basically these people board what they think is a shuttlecraft. But it's actually like a meat rendering plant or something. I don't know. Because then you get a little. Then you get.
Are you talking about Soylent Green? Is that where you're going?
You get a little Soylent Green action in that thing as well.
No, I want no part of your ship. This is no good.
Well, do you think, is there a non-exploitive way to make something like that happen other than having like some kind of utopian where it's seen as a noble sacrifice? And
I think that's the only way. And even then, you're going to end up with people who don't want to do it.
Yeah, like what's the odds?
And you've got to take them out before they can influence everybody else, right?
Yeah, the odds of a 1,000-year journey that there's going to be like a period of unrest that threatens to upend the whole apple cart, right?
Think of the last 1,000 years of humanity.
No shit.
a thousand years in essentially a prison is going to be horrible. It's going to be way worse than what we had here.
But on the other hand, that's what the planet Earth is, right? It's just a big rock of a spaceship that's hurtling through. With no real point in your life. I mean, you know, ultimately, unless you subscribe to one of the world's great religions, life is ultimately kind of pointless. And we kind of manage that by ignoring it, right?
Sure, sure.
You don't think about like. You know, the fact that if you live or die, the rest of the universe, 99.99999% of it's not going to give a shit.
No, man, I've got some weird ideas about the universe and humanity's role in it, but we can talk about that another time.
Right on, right on. Well, I think, do we feel like we've squeezed enough juice out of this topic?
Yeah, I mean, I think no matter how you slice it, it's a difficult problem to solve, and it may come down to one day we have to do it, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, that's the thing. Only the first generation gets to make the choice. So it's like, it's not like you can, I mean, unless you have some kind of really advanced cryogenics and automation, you're never going to get away from that problem with a generational starship.
Yeah. I think cryogenics is probably the best way to.
And then it's no longer a generational starship either. So
true.
But anyway, like I said, it kind of captured my imagination. And it's still something I'm kind of, I've given a lot of thought of. It's kind of got the whole national, novel writing month juices flowing. Like, I might try to take a stab at NaNoWriMo this year with the generational starship idea, because you could do like several chapters of each generation, and you could see how things are sliding into madness, and then maybe they recover, and do they eventually get there? It would be it's a really really interesting idea.
I'm picturing a lot like Battlestar Galactica, because I mean, you kind of dealt with a lot of those issues in that show. Like, I mean, Gaius does his old religion thing, and you could base it kind of
that's,
on that.
That's another approach. You could actually still involve diluting the populace, but you could make an external threat. Like, you know, you could invent like a Cylons that are they're following you that would keep people in line because they're afraid. You know, they don't have too long to think about how bad their lives are because, you know, if you stop moving, you're going to get killed.
Yeah, and the idealistic sort of clashes that would come up. Like, okay, you've got your one religion that everybody's supposed to believe in, but what happens when another guy starts a different one?
Right.
You know?
Right.
That'd be interesting.
Okay, what's your first topic?
My first topic is a question I saw on Reddit, which I think fits in line with what the personal arrogance love to talk about.
Okay.
Animals. They love animals.
Especially sperm. Especially sperm whales.
Exactly. So the question was, what animal other than a spider, because it's already been done, would you like to be bit by to gain its powers? And I know if this were Eric, he'd say a sperm whale because, you know, like big dicks and you can hold your breath underwater forever.
Right.
He'd be all about that. But what animal would you want to be bit by to gain its powers?
Wow.
And I don't think it's like with Spider-Man, he doesn't grow a whole bunch of legs or anything, right? Like he doesn't take on the form of the animal,
right?
But he gets like its ability to spin webs and its ability to, like be super strong, like lift more than its body weight and all that stuff. So it doesn't really change your form. It just makes you have their capabilities.
Okay, I've got an idea.
Can you do a bird? Like, if it doesn't change your form, can you even do a bird? Because the ability to fly,
yeah, you could go with like a,
on its form.
You could go with like an archangel, you know, where he's got natural wings and he can fly with that, and he's got hollow bones. But
okay,
still,
I was gonna say a peregrine falcon because they're super fast and they're like near the top of the food chain on the bird. Or in the air. I wouldn't want to be like a pigeon. That'd be stupid. I'd just get eaten immediately.
But you can shit on everything all the time. That's kind of cool.
Super shitting power.
Well, the other thing you get with the peregrine falcon is you get the super binocular vision.
Exactly, yep.
So it's like you get a little bit other, you know, razor sharp talons. You get some arguably good superpowers with that.
Definitely. But I obviously the main one is flight. I mean, that's,
right. Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
So I've been watching this YouTube series. It's a very funny take on a nature documentary where they've got like someone that sounds like Morgan Freeman narrating them. It's called the True Facts series. And they got like true facts about the hedgehog, true facts about the praying mantis. And they're always done in this very dry analytical style, but they're talking true facts about the animals, but they're so outrageous that they're kind of funny. But the one I just watched last night was the naked mole rat. Okay. And they make them seem like that they're the closest things you can get to super, super human because, they're for all intents and purposes, they're immortal.
How does that work?
I don't know that there's a certain type of gene. I forget what it's called, but it basically is responsible for aging. And, you know, because aging is basically copying errors when your cells multiply and divide and they get worse and worse at it until you start getting things like cancer and your skin gets saggy and your hair falls out and, you know, your shit just wears out and breaks down. It doesn't copy perfect. They don't have that problem. They are immune to all they don't get cancer. They're immune to most diseases that affect mammals. They've got really crazy adaptions for digging. Like, their teeth grow on the outside of their lips so they can chew with their lips closed. So that makes, digging suck less.
Okay.
They're still mammals, but their temperature, they don't use energy to keep themselves warm or to cool themselves off or to warm themselves. They just use the ambient temperature of the dirt. So I could get behind an immortal, ageless, diseaseless, naked mole rat man that can just tunnel thing underground and build vast underground fortresses. Yeah.
So I like the idea of underground fortresses because that's somewhere where the humans probably aren't going to seek you out.
Oh yeah, I mean you've got your built-in Batman layer. You just, you know, and if your arch nemesis blows it up, you just, you know, go to next state over and start it all over again.
And if you don't get a mouthful of dirt in the process, that's awesome.
Yeah. And ever since I've been a little kid, I've always been kind of fascinated with the underground layers. Like, I like caves and spelunking. Mm-hmm. I actually seriously thought about buying an old abandoned Minuteman missile silo because the government was selling them off for like a pittance 10 years ago in like Wyoming and Montana and the Dakotas. You could actually buy this giant, it was like 20 acres of land and a missile silo that was like 6 stories deep and 30 foot across and had these underground storage tanks and huge supplies of water and all this 50s era computer technology. And I'm like, man, if you get that and sink a couple $100,000 into it, you could make a sweet ass, you know, supervillain lair.
Sure.
And for that strongly appeals to me for some reason. I don't know if it's because I'm a social asshole or what. Is there an option?
Because you're a mole rat waiting to happen.
Is there an option to be bit by both a peregrine falcon and a naked mole rat?
No.
Then you get your powers combined.
Yeah, you can't fly and dig underground. No way. That's cheating, man.
Mm. Okay, I suppose you're right. A bat would be pretty good, too, because you get the powers of flight and echolocation.
Yeah, you lose sight, though, right? You're not gonna...
No, but I think bats can see. They're just in the dark a lot. I've never heard of people...
I guess they can see. I don't think they have spectacular vision, that's for sure.
That's probably true. Then, you know, you could be the Batman, which, you know, I understand that's kind of cliched, but...
Yeah.
All right. You got anything else on that topic?
No, we're good on that.
Okay. So traditionally, Eric and Jesse do their mid-show break, and it's either like a trivia show or they've done scat categories. We want to go way back in the archives and do one of our personal favorites where they did the magic card reading. And the conceit is they're like senators on the floor of the Senate and they're filibustering some law. And they finished the phone book. They've read the unabridged works of Tolkien. They're now just opening up Magic the Gathering packs and reading the stats off the cards as a part of their filibuster. So who do you want to start, me or you?
I'll go ahead and start.
All right. I'm going to get my card out while you are doing that.
So, I've got a terrible Boston accent. It often turns into Australian, and it often turns into New York. So, yeah. I don't know, man. We'll give it
Who's
a shot.
Who's to say you could be the senator from New York?
Senator from New York. No, it's always a senator from Massachusetts, right?
It always is, but, I mean, Shit, we're not exactly doing everything their way, so... This is a tribute, not a slavish copy.
Okay. I'm going to try to do the Massachusetts one. Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, I have a very important concern to bring before you this evening before we continue our debate. And it's called Jesse and Balmgiver. It's one colorless, one white, one blue. A creature. It's a human cleric. And the card text reads, prevent the next one damage that'll be dealt to target creature or player this turn. Target creature is unblockable this turn. You got to tap for both of those, so, you know. And it says, also, you have two choices. Heed my advice now, need my healing later. So... That's it, man. That's my best. That's my best shot. It was so fucking terrible.
I appreciate the senator from Southern Australia's comments as we consider the full spectrum of the debate that we need to have before this very important law passes. I would like to add to his words, Rafiq of the Mini. He is casted with one colorless mana, one green, one white, one blue. He is a legendary creature, particularly a human knight, and a mythic rare, I might add, to add to the gravity and the seriousness of the situation. He is exalted. Whenever a creature you control attacks alone, that creature gets +1/+1 until the end of turn. I think that's very important as I stand alone against the this august body, as we consider this very important mana. Whenever a creature you control attacks alone, it additionally gains double strike until the end of turn. His flavor text reads, many seagulls, sigils even, one purpose. Indeed, Rafik, indeed. He has an attack of 3 and a body of 3. I think if we can agree on nothing else, we can agree that this is a pretty good
pretty
card.
Pretty good card.
Pretty good card. All right.
Oh, jeez.
That was terrible.
But I hope it was at least funny.
I think we did the concept justice.
All right. See, I was going for the Kevin Costner Southern Australia Boston accent. That's what I was saying.
So, for my next topic, and this is kind of a little bit of a Facebook roundup issue, too. There was one of the boys' listeners wanted to know my thoughts on the Superman movie, the new Man of Steel. Eric talked at length, I think it was last week or maybe it was the week before, about, you know, his thoughts and how he liked it. And I'm trying to find out who actually submitted this question so I can give him credit, but, have you seen it yet, Jim?
No, I haven't seen it at all.
Okay. It was, Angela is the person. I actually got the sex wrong even.
I would say that I actually, from the previews, thought it looked pretty good.
Oh, I was super excited. I'm not really a fan of Superman, the comics. I am a Justice League fan. I'm not really a fan of his standalone adventures. But I definitely like Superman. I like the Donner movies. I actually didn't mind the Superman Returns 2006 reboot. But I did not like the Man of Steel. And there's a lot of reasons. There's going to be a lot of spoilers because I have to kind of talk in particular. This is kind of a problem I'm having with movies in general today, which I feel like they're too long. And I'm not saying that, like, I don't have the attention span to go over, like, a 90-minute film. I think a film should be as exactly as long as it needs to be to actually do its job.
Yeah.
But I feel like ever since, you know, the success of the Lord of the Rings movies, where, you know, kind of demonstrated that people will sit around for a 2.5-hour to a 3-hour movie and it rake in big bucks, that the filmmakers have incorrectly drawn from that's a good thing, that a length of movie in itself is good.
Oh, and certainly Peter Jackson did.
Yeah,
look at the freaking Hobbit.
Yeah,
that was way too long.
And what I don't understand is there's a lot of fans that are still loving these movies even though they are too long to be, in my mind, effective. Like, it's really cool to see a nice CGI battle sequence. I get really bored when that one sequence has gone on for 20 minutes.
You know, Transformers 2.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's not furthering the plot. Like, the plot is about this particular conflict, but, you know, it's a binary question. The guys either win or lose. And no matter how many limbs you tear off or how many guys fall off bridges or how many arrows get shot in an orc, we're just basically waiting to see, especially for stuff like The Hobbit, where it's a foregone conclusion, we're just waiting to see how it ends. And for me, my interest is not held by, like, you really like tapioca pudding? Well, I made you a gallon of it, so you must really, really like this gallon of tapioca pudding. Like, no, I want to switch to chocolate, and I want to get some pineapple chunks in there, and I want some cherries on top. And Man of Steel, the last third of that movie is essentially one long battle of Superman punching people.
Really?
And just when you think it's over, there's a bonus 15-minute sequence of him punching just one dude. And the other thing is, he is devastating Metropolis. Like 9/11's got nothing on it. We're talking city blocks ravaged. The death toll has to be in the hundreds of thousands, if not millions. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's not a Superman move. Like, Superman would have taken this shit to the moon. Superman would have took this shit into orbit. Superman would have taken this to the North Pole. He would have taken it to some, like, the Bikini Island atoll. He would have done something to preserve the population of the city and of the planet that he loves. And it seems like there wasn't even thought of that. It's like there wasn't even a scene of like rubble going towards a school bus for children and Superman diverting his attention to save that problem. It was just like, oh, it's really cool to see Superman kick guys through buildings. So let's just have entire buildings demolished when that stuff happens. And it goes on forever, man, forever.
This is not a case of like, the greater good sort of thing where, okay, so I know the movie is about Zod. Obviously everyone knows that now that they've seen it. This is not a case of like, he needs to stop these guys and it doesn't matter the cost to this city because they're more evil than that.
Well, no, for sure. They have to be stopped. Okay. Because they're trying to turn, they're terraforming the planet Earth into Krypton, which is going to have,
okay,
which is going to have the side effect of killing everyone. Okay.
So there's that. I mean, a small price to pay to save the planet, right?
Yes, yes. So, but on
also,
the other hand,
does he have the option to choose where to fight, or are they? Is he just going to them to where they are?
Well, they need, okay, so they need Superman because he's got embedded in his DNA.
Oh, well, then done. He goes to the moon. They have to
exactly
him, right?
Okay. I mean, and the other thing is like, you are in Superman's lane. Okay. So it's your job as a filmmaker to come up with a plot where maybe, genocide doesn't have to happen. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. and the other thing is he eventually banishes all these people to the Phantom Zone, except for Zod escapes.
Oh, boy.
They have a 15-minute punch fest. And at the end, Superman snaps his neck and murders him. Like,
okay,
you cannot totally fuck up a character worse. It would be approximately like the Batman for the climax of a Batman film pulling out a revolver and shooting the villain right in the face in cold blood.
Yeah.
Like, they make it justified, and he has this 15-second Kryptonian death scream because he's so overwrought about what he had to do. But it's like it fucks up the character, man. And at that point, after I'd already watched 30 minutes of senseless CGI violence, I was just like, wow, that's the ultimate insult, Zack Snyder. Like, it's like, I don't care what you did with his underwear, you know. And that's the other thing, as I'm watching like the making of these movies, and they're all talking about how like, well, you know, you obviously can't have the man's underwear on the outside of his costume. That's ridiculous. It pulls you right out of the film. And I'm like, really?
That's
the biggest,
what pulls you out?
That's the biggest problem with Superman's realism. The man wears red underwear on the outside of his costume.
Yes, apparently.
He's plugging in a 20,000-year-old USB drive into a 20,000-year-old Krypton ship to drive it around. Nobody has a problem with that, but underwear, ooh, that would just take me right out of the fucking film.
Oh, completely.
It's I don't know, man. I actually
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I actually really liked the first half of it. You know, it has a good origin story. You know, the acting, like, what's his name? James Cavill. He is a really good Superman. And the crazy dude from Boardwalk Empire, Michael, what's his name? Like Michael Madsen or something?
It's not Madsen.
Anyway, he's a really good General Zod. And, you know, again, if you could have just banished them both, banished the whole lot to the Phantom Zone, that could have kept that plot going. And it would have dispensed with a 15-minute sequence of punching that we were already tired of seeing. And it wouldn't have made for Superman to murder one of his fellow Kryptonians in, I guess, hot blood. It's not cold blood. It's hot blood. But I just – and there again at the end, because what happened is Zod was basically saying – I'll never stop killing humans, as he's using his laser vision. Like, Superman's got him in headlock, and he's got his laser vision. He's trying to burn. He's trying to burn a multicultural, multiracial family of four to death at some museum. Oh, and, like, the laser beams are, like, feet from this family. And Superman's, like, he doesn't know what to do, so he just snaps the dude's neck, you know? And wow. I'm like, you're Superman. You could have just shoved your legs into the ground and taken this into orbit. You could have put your, you could have covered his hands with your eyes. You could have told the family that has watched this laser beam advancing towards them for 45 seconds to move, you know, get out of the way, move left. I'm going to take him right. You could
you think have, he'd, it's going to take him a while. If that's his strategy, it's going to take him a while to destroy humanity. He's just burning families of four one at a time.
And again, I can't stress enough how many hundreds of thousands of people have died in this movie already.
Yeah.
You know, Superman draws the line at these guys.
So did the other two guys go flying off in those two-dimensional diamonds?
Oh, what was the, first of
the
all,
Phantom
was,
Zone is?
No, the Phantom Zone was not so much like 70s record album floating through space. It was more of like a cryogenic ship that they were imprisoned on, and they had the Phantom Drive, which is like this faster than light interdimensional technology that they were just going to be stuck in and then get out 50 years later. And there's a lot of hoo-ha to that, but there's actually a whole Kryptonian army. There was like, you know, a platoon of Kryptonians stomping around Earth.
Okay, so I hear Russell Crowe is actually really good in this movie.
He is. He's another one of the cast that and Diane Lang as Superman's adoptive Earth mother is really good. And there's a really great sequence of him as a little boy, like first day of school, and he's freaking out because he's never been around that many people, and he's seeing through their skin, and he can hear conversations from miles away, and he's acting like an autistic child on a bad day. And, you know, she has to kind of talk him down from that. And it's just, they had so much good stuff. And it's like, we are out of ideas. So, you know what? 45 minutes of CGI punching coming up.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't like that stuff either.
Yeah. It's so expensive, but it somehow comes across as feeling cheap, really.
I wish Eric were here to defend his position, or at least I'd seen it so I could play devil's advocate, but I can't.
Yeah.
Can't do any of that.
Well, so that's my second topic, rebuttal of his review of The Man of Steel. What's your second topic, Jim?
So I wanted to bring up something I was thinking about the other day. So we were doing our podcast, our Mad Men podcast. We got finished, and it takes a while. It was a long one. And I had been storing up my urine for a good 2 hours.
You're really doing this topic.
I'm doing this topic.
Oh,
we're
wow.
totally gonna do it. It's our show, man. We get to do whatever we want.
This is your show. I am disavowing any involvement.
I don't have to do the topic if you don't want to.
No, do the topic.
All right, I'm bringing it. So I go into the bathroom and I take what I consider is the longest pee ever on the books.
Right, like you get bored halfway through and like I wish this was. It's like the Man of Steel of pisses.
Exactly.
All that's left is for you to snap General Zod's neck and be done with it.
So I got to thinking while I was, you know, in the middle of it, thinking, you know, how would I prepare if I were in a competition for the longest piss ever?
Is that a thing?
You know, I've seen Japanese, I guess, game shows. I don't know. Where they see who can hold it the longest, and it's like just a bunch of dudes standing around in diapers waiting to piss themselves.
Of course. Of course they are.
Of course. So I assume if that is a thing, then this has to be a thing as well.
Okay.
Like, how long of a piss can you take? So I was thinking, how would I prepare for it? Certainly, hydration is important, right?
Yeah.
I mean, hydration is probably the most important, but you can't hydrate rapidly. You have to hydrate slowly over many days. If I know anything, if I learned anything from that Ewan McGregor movie with him in the desert, Men Who Stare at Goats, that you gotta stay hydrated, and you gotta do it slowly. So you drink small amounts of water throughout over the course of like a week,
okay,
to really get your hydration up. So that's step one. Step two, obviously, I mean, you have to be able to truly fill your bladder, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you don't have a full bladder, you might as well not show up. So you have to, there's a fine art here where you have to learn how to take a number two without taking a number one so that you can kind of slim down what's in your gut so your bladder has more room to expand, right?
Yeah, okay.
I mean, that's a skill. That's a skill that you can practice and harness for this competition. So that would be the two things I would do. I mean, hydration and significant bladder expansion via gut reduction.
Okay.
That's what I'm thinking. Do you have any other ideas?
So are there any rules? Like, I assuming you can't put an internal catheter that pumps water through your bladder, right?
No, like, because that's not your body.
Can I hook IVs to myself?
No external fluids during the competition.
Okay. All right. So I think that I would get several gallons of water and I would, sure. I would just be drinking all day.
Yep.
You know, like just sipping because I'm trying to basically load my body with like 5 to 10 pounds of water weight. Okay.
Definitely.
And those kidneys are going to pull and I'm going to hold my pee until it's painful. Okay. Until it's so painful that I honestly can't go. And then I'm going to pinch off the tip of my dick and I'm going to relax whatever inner sphincter is in your bladder and allow that whole system of plumbing to fill. Cause you've already stretched your bladder to the breaking point, right?
Yeah. So you want the full expansion.
You need to get your urethra. I imagine it's got 2 or 3 times expansion. So I'm going to let that happen. And also that's going to, because I can keep that thing pinched and for probably, I got longer muscle control in my hands than I do in my bladder. So that's, my kidneys are still going to be dumping water into my bladder this whole time. And it's going to be super freaking painful.
No, so here's the thing. I would suggest taking a lot of painkillers as well.
Oh.
So that you can allow it to expand more than the guy next to you who's not.
Good point. Yeah. Something that doesn't involve muscle or relaxation, of course. It's just got to be...
of course.
It's just got to be some kind of, general pain, non-narcotic pain relief. Because the narcotics might weaken your resolve to actually undo this to yourself. And the key thing is you want to unpinch... Like because you don't want to burst your bladder and then die of sepsis, right?
That does not sound fun.
You basically want to let go like 30 to 60 seconds before that would actually happen, before you're going to rip. So like right as you feel something maybe starting to let go inside of you, and here's the key, okay? You can't just let go of the tip. That's a rookie move because then it's just going to just come out like a fucking fire hose and that's going to rob you of your we're not talking quantity. We're talking duration, right?
Yes.
So you just want to crack that thing open. So you've got this high, low volume, high pressure jet coming out and you milk that.
I just hope you're aimed in the right direction when it starts.
Well, that wasn't a part of the deal. I thought we were just out and like outside, you know.
Really? So you could turn the hose on the guy next to you?
Ooh,
that's no good.
Again,
make him lose his concentration.
Again, I blame you for not well establishing the rules of this competition.
All right. So beforehand, that's part of your training, right? Learning how to take piss in the face without losing your concentration.
I would think that in this format, this is the street version of the longest pee rules.
Sure.
You got to husband that pee stream to gradually let go of the pressure so you can maintain the pee stream for the longest time possible.
I sense an Ed Norton movie coming up called
Piss Club. Yeah. Whiz Club.
I can see the poster already.
And the tagline's like more than two shakes and you're playing with it. you could obviously do that routine over the course of several months to stretch out your bladder into truly epic sizes. But I think that's the key, that you can't use your internal sphincter alone. It's not strong enough, but you could clamp down on your hand. Now, I don't know. Can ladies do an equivalent
of clamping down?
Yeah, like can they like grab some folds down there and just squeeze as hard?
A-Rod revealing his true understanding of the female anatomy.
Somewhere D. Candlish, she's either switched this off or she's going to type a reply about how this is possible. But well, I mean, I'm familiar with the anatomy down there, and I feel like, yeah, you could do something with the folds and somehow maintain the pinching, but you're not going to have as long as a urethra.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and there again, if you're a shower, not a grower, you got a natural advantage because you got that nice long right banana to work with.
Extra what, two and a half inches there?
Well, we're not talking about record breaking penis length here, Jim. Come on now, 2 or 3 inches. That's a monster.
All right, I think we've no pun intended milked that for all it's worth. let's keep going.
Okay, what is next? I've got to let me consult the guys.
We have a lot of questions from people on Facebook.
We did. I just want to make sure that's where we're supposed to be at. The ball move promotion. We can do that. So if you enjoyed this, you'd like to get in some quality television podcasting. Jim and I actually hold down the fort over at baldmove.com. We've got coverage of Mad Men. We've got coverage of Game of Thrones. We've got Walking Dead, Justified. Tom and Kelly do Downton Abbey and some other Edwardian television series. They're taking, another crack at Titanic right now. We've got Eric and Jesse, of course, on Personal Arrogance that you're familiar with. Also, if you haven't tried Amy, Jerilyn, and Susan's show, The Because Show, you really have to. They are on fire. They talk about books. They talk about cosmetics. They talk about real life shit. They're extremely funny, extremely talented. I highly recommend everyone go over to baldmove.com and give that a whirl. I think that's enough. Also, we've got about 7 days left on our Breaking Good Kickstarter. Eric is actually working on some swanky t-shirt designs for that. You can get those at the $30 promotion level, and they're going to be one-of-a-kind Breaking Bad-themed Kickstarter commemorative t-shirts. Once this is over, there will be no way to get them. We're not going to be selling them in the stores or anything like that, so check that out and help us make Breaking Good better this year. You can get in touch with the Personal Arrogance guys. I know we didn't read any feedback, but they're going to be starving for it next week. At personalarrogance@gmail.com. You can follow them on Twitter at Personal Podcast. You can follow them on Facebook at facebook.com/baldmove or I think /personalarrogance as well. And also, you can give them a shout out on voicemail 360-362-0024. And as always, they appreciate their rate and review on iTunes. Next stop, I think, is a Facebook roundup. So let me go over to where I've archived that stuff, and we'll start cherry picking some stuff. Josh Perigo wants to know, should I bother to start watching Falling Skies, or should I just listen to a podcast about a piece of shit television show?
Yeah, Josh, I see what you did there. I would say neither. Don't, if you haven't started watching the show, probably don't start. It's not that good. I have continued watching it because I started watching it, and it's not that bad either. And as far as the podcast goes, I do that because I'm watching it. So take it or leave it, man.
Sam G asks, is it worse than a punch in the face to lose your iPhone charger or equivalent?
Well, it depends on how long. It depends on where you are. Like if you're backpacking through Colombia or something, yeah, it's pretty bad. Not a lot of Apple stores around there. If you have easy access to an Apple store, it's not so bad. So I'd say, depending on location, worse than a punch in the face.
As a Droid user, I don't understand this question because I can just go to a damn near any store in any part of the world and get a micro USB cord and be good to go. So definitely, yeah. I would rather be not punched in the face than that. Let's see here. We had some questions for Improv Rick and Lori. Walking Dead skit. I don't know that we can do that on this much notice. Can I even do a Rick right off the cuff? Carl, ever since your death, you've been haunting me. I don't know how to go on without the loss of you too. I don't know if I can do it.
Those usually take like a couple hours of writing, believe it or not.
Yeah. To make them not suck Yeah. But gave you a little taste there. Let's see. Oh, D, speaking of D, Candlish, which I can't wait to hear your urethral strategies on the longest peeing competition. What are some movies that Aaron and Jim think are underrated and should be seen? Like, not the blockbuster and superhero movies everyone knows about, but the little ones that fly under the radar.
So I know that people who are familiar with Personal Arrogance are probably going to already have heard about this. But I feel like I must mention it because if Eric were here, he definitely would. That's Attack the Block. Kind of a one that definitely flew under my radar until I heard them talk about it, and I went and watched it, and it's really good. Really good.
I got a couple of recommendations. Equilibrium.
Yeah, Christian which Bale.
Which is a great Christian Bale right before he became a megastar movie. Science fiction, dystopian, 1984 type society with awesome action scenes.